Next to that, we had one of the local farmers by the name of Heaper, who owned the steam engine set to do the plowing and that sort of thing. He also farmed, and he was the local cheesemaker. Now, we had one cheesemaker at Alder and one cheesemaker on the station road. Now, they used to cut the straws in short lengths, about 9 inches long, and take them out to the women, and they used to sew these together with thread and put at the bottom of the troughs where they made the cheese in, so that they were sold with a piece of straw underneath them always. And they used to send these by railway to London daily or weekly, whatever it was. They used to do a bit of dealing at the same time. Next door to that we had the town crier, and he used to go around with his bell and give the news out to the village, or if there was a scare or if there was a likelihood of flood, they would send round the village shouting out for people who they call scradgers. And we want scradgers to go on the river to raise the banks a bit in the low places to stop the water from flooding over. And I've been on that job, and when you're on that job in the middle of the night, you're very thankful for the Cottenham Salvation Army who come round with hot tea. And when you get beyond there, we had another pond that had a wall right round it, and you could turn the horse round the pond, ride it round the pond with a wagon or a cart. Beyond that, we had the local coal merchant who also was a fruit carter. Then you get next door to that, you get the brick pitch that were used to make hand bricks, handmade bricks, and a small kiln which was later pulled down and rebuilt in a bigger style with a new company. But they had to pack up because the clays had too much saltpeter in them. These pits, of course, had willows and that type of thing in, when was an ideal play place for us boys. When you get next to that, you come to the old carter who used to meet the 10 o'clock train and bring all the groceries and any other parcels that came into the village. Charge you so much, tuppence or threepence each parcel, to bring it from the railway and deliver it to your door. On his return journey, he used to pick up fruit and take that to the station to go to the markets. When then you got the station, which had two signalmen and two porters and a couple of clerks and a station master, and the unfortunate part about it was that the trains ran from St. Ives to Ely in the morning and from Ely to St. Ives at night, and that was the wrong way for the mail to come. So although we had a railway, the mail came to Haddon by pony trap and left at night in the same way. And over the railway bridge on the left hand side was the first brick pits that we had in Haddon, and they were owned by a man by the name of Dewson. There was still a part of the kiln there in my young days, but that's all gone now, and the local authorities are now using part of the pits for a salvage dump. When you got beyond that, we had come to what they call Staple A's and the boundary that way, and we come to another farm with a man by the name of Player, who in the First World War was a supply of hay and straw to the local forces. Now, if we take Wilburton Road, we have the first thing on the corner is, of course, the bakery, which supplied about two-thirds of the villagers in Haddenham and Wilburton. Then we come to a small harness maker shop run by a man from Sutton for the name of Wagstaff. And then we have a yard that runs back to the Three Kings. A bit farther on we come to Chules Lane, which at one time led to Chules Farm. And we only knew it as Dew Lane. And next door to Dew Lane was one of the local engineers, William Burkett and Sons, who had thrashing tackles and used to go round the village thrashing corn or cutting chaff. About three doors away we had another one by the name of Frederick Peacock and Sons. And he was a local blacksmith as well, and did a lot of blacksmith work in the village, shoeing wheels and all that type of thing, and was he'd make his own drums and various things like that, and elevators. I've seen them making elevators there. When you get up a bit farther on, we've got the local chimney sweep, and then you get the Hinton Hall Farm, as it was called, which was the Hardwicks Farm, and a footpath that goes through to Wilburton. And it was originally a road before the present road was made on the crest of the hill. Up next door was an old thatched cottage, which my father had for keeping poultry and rabbits in. And that's where Peacocks live now. Then we used to come to what we call Sally Dimmock's Corner, which was a very sharp bend, and where we had quite a lot of crashes in the first days of cars and cycles. If the road was frosty, you may depend you came off your cycle at Sally Dimmock's Corner. One day the local chimney sweep was coming round on his cycle, and the doctor had got his new Model T Ford car flying round there, and the poor old chimney sweep fell onto the grass, much to the doctor's amusement. But the chimney sweep got his own back. He was driving his steam engines one day when the doctor came behind, pipping his hoot, I want to come by. So he held him back as long as ever he dare. But the unfortunate part about what it, he cut his thumb and had to go and see the doctor the next week, much to the doctor's annoyance. Then that led on to Wilburton, which is the end of the territory. And in 1926, they put 12 houses on the edge of the boundary, and they called them Wilburton Council houses, but they were actually in Haddenham Parish. Turning back at Sally Dimmock's Corner, you come to what we call Duck Lane, which was a place where there were only two or three houses at one time, and led towards Linden Farm. And on the opposite side to Linden Farm was a place called Hell Corner. That was due to the monks used to come up from the river that way, and it was called Friar's End. And that's no doubt how it got the name of Hell Corner. But there was a tinsmith who lived there who learnt his trade in jail. And he was a very interesting man. And his wife was a fat lady who was one of the local singers. When you go down Friar's End, there's a lane go either side, and on the right hand side of the road was a field that was got a lot of hills and holes in it, where they dug the clay to make the red bricks. And they only recently found a mark where the kiln was, where they dug that hole up there. And on the opposite side was a field called Brick Kiln Close. And that has had the clay off the top to a depth of about 4 feet taken off the bottom end of that. That was also where they used to make the red bricks on the spot. Then when you go from there down towards the river, you come to the cut again, which takes the water off the hill. Then you get to the lowest part, which is the drain, and farther on to the river. Then you can get along the droves, the fen droves, and come around to Aldra. From there you can go on to Hill Row, and from Hill Row you can go on to Station Road on the droves. Now in my younger days, these droves were all earth droves, and they weren't concreted until such time as just before the Second World War. The railway, in my young days, carried a fair bit of traffic, and cattle was conveyed by rail. On the north side was a pen where you drove the cattle around in, and the trucks were run up beside that, and they were converted then into the cattle floats and taken by rail to the local markets. But most of the cattle at that time of day was driven. We had a merchant or a dealer that lived at Streatham by the name of Jacobs, and he employed two drovers who used to come around buying stock and driving them to Ely Market or St. Ives Market. Now in Haddon, between Haddon and Wilburton, he hired a field, so if he was travelling stock to St. Ives from Ely area or farther away, they would bring that there and during the week, and then at the weekend on Sunday they would drive these cattle through to St. Ives Market for Monday morning, or the same the other way if they wanted to go to Ely. Now, there was no lorries to cart any cattle or anything like that, so it was a common sight to have them drive through the village. One day they were coming through Haddon with a herd of bullocks, and one decided to come up our backyard, walk up the passage and into the house and into the pantry. So I always say that my mother was the only woman in Haddon who had a live bullock in her pantry, which was about 8-10 feet square. And we had to break the perforated zinc off the window, poke a stick through to get him out, and he came out of the front door. So it was quite a sight to stand and watch a bullock come out of your front door. The water supply of the village was all water from wells. We had no pipe supply in the First World War, and when it did come along, we had public meetings and speeches for and against it before it was eventually put in by a firm from Hunstanton called F.W. Shanks & Co. The local water supply was all wells or pumps, and some pumps had a well that was supposed to be the same depth as the height of Haddon Church. We had one of the local villagers by the name of Watts, who was the local well digger, and I helped him to dig a couple of wells up Wilburton Road. They used to make the trestle on the spot and get a piece of round wood and drive a handle in it, and then you had a rope with a couple of catches on it and two pails, one coming up full and one going down empty. And they made the what they called a drum, which was a circular thing that looked something like a barrel, which had a 4-inch rim top and near the bottom. And when they got down to where water coming up, they used to put this thing down the well and then put the bricks inside it on the bottom shelf and fill it up to the top shelf with bricks. Then as they dug down into the well and into the water, it used to seep through the sides, and it held the sand so that it didn't get washed in. And it also formed a support to put the bricks on, to brick inside of the well. Occasionally, some people would try the stunt of putting two cart tires, one larger than the other, in, and start bricking up on that. But it was always a risky business. Not many houses had a water supply, about 4 or 5 in the village, and this was supplied by pumping up to a tank in the roof and then running your water back in the house. But at Aldrith, they had a water supply from the hill, and they had standpipes in the village where you could go and draw water. But not so Haddenham. We worked backwards as a rule in Haddenham. We had a gas generator in the station road area before my time, and we had acetylene gas in the village. And after the First World War, after the blackout of that, we had oil lamps in the village, and the last lamplighter was Harry Fuller. There's quite a lot of wells in Haddenham now that have gradually got filled in by being neglected and left, and there's still a danger that you can fall down one or two of them. We found one in High Street where we'd had a traction engine each side of it, and then a lorry went in the middle and he fell in with his front wheel. And in farmyards and places like that, they used to have a pump, perhaps got neglected after they had water laid on. And the only place that we had water in the farms was down at the Elms. They had a drain in the hill, and the water came through the bullock yard and the cow sheds and the stables, and then overflowed into the pond and then ran down the hill. And that was the only supply of water in the village in about just before the First World War. But you could dig a well almost anywhere on the top of Haddenham Hill in the sand, and the clay underneath holding the water, you could find water almost anywhere. And that's why they made so much fuss about not having a water supply or pipe water supply, and that's why they made so many meetings against it. Thank you.